What's going on, Curiosity Builders? I'm Chris Martin, and you're listening to Getting Work to Work, a weekly podcast for creative entrepreneurs, storytellers, visionaries, and changemakers who are on a mission of chasing big ideas, telling epic stories, and leaving living legacies. Whether you're just starting out or have been at this creative and curious life for some time, I hope you learn something new in this podcast and find yourself inspired to break through the barriers that hold you back and keep you stuck from getting your work to work. Have you ever thought about what goes into a successful learning experience? How could design thinking and human-centered design create learning environments where every student's voice is equal and the teacher alone is not the holder of knowledge? These are a couple of questions inspired by today's conversation with Aaron Bray, Teacher Delight Specialist and Lead Coach for Student Innovation Teams at Construct, a foundation dedicated to understanding the needs of teachers and principals as they embrace the challenges of keeping pace with a rapidly changing world. We touch on why teachers should really be called learning experience designers, how learning is a way of understanding problems, how design tools such as prototyping and post-it note clustering create a bias toward action, and how design helps learners keep up with the pace of change. Show notes and links to all the good stuff mentioned in this episode can be found at gwtw.co/396. Aaron, welcome to Getting Work to Work. What does it mean for teachers to be designers?
Teachers are designers. They've always been designers. And a lot of times they're very natural designers. They're making decisions that are influencing people's experiences every day. They're constantly prototyping lessons. And, you know, if it doesn't work first period, they change it based on the feedback that they got first period so that it's better second period. And so it has struck me as I've come into the design world that, you know, it's this unrecognized thing that teachers are doing. And so really what my organization Construct has worked on is really kind of calling that out and helping teachers to identify as designers and also supporting them with the tools and methods and mindsets of the design world. Because strangely, educators have been really kind of isolated from that.
Once you described that connection between like designing curriculum and designing experience, it went off in my head like, well, duh, you know, it's like, but there's oftentimes that disconnect.
Totally. I mean, and there's so many things that teachers are designing, from the seating situation in their classroom, the walls in their class, and, you know, it's physical design, it's culture design, it's routines, it's roles. It's, I mean, there are so many things that teachers are doing all the time that is design work, but they haven't really been supported with any resources that might help them design in different or, you know, more intentional ways. When you think about it that way, really, we should call them learning experience designers and not teachers. It more accurately reflects the work they're doing.
Yeah. Well, it's interesting too, because once you start thinking about it, especially learning in the context of experience design, then you start thinking about the whole journey of learning, how we go from, you know, like K through 12 into college, and then into, you know, the role of lifelong learning and how experience morphs and changes through all those different experiences.
Yeah, no, that's really true. And we all have to kind of become the designers of our own learning eventually. And so that's part of the goal.
So how would you describe how you have designed your own personal learning experience?
Elaborate on that.
So one of the things that I really like thinking about is like, we have a digital experience where we can create our own knowledge management systems where, you know, like, how do we know what we know? How are we learning? How are we like curating our learning? So when you talk about describing this experience of learning, you know, as a professional, as, you know, someone who is in this world of teaching and designing and all of the things that you do, like, what does that experience for you look like now when you're learning new things?
The way that that has changed for me, especially being exposed to the tools of human-centered design, is really, you know, starting with people and making sure that When I'm learning things, I'm asking lots of questions of other people to understand their experience and connect it to whatever it is I'm learning about. So, you know, I spend a lot of time trying to understand and learn how to serve teachers better and support them better. And so really, you know, going into their classrooms and seeing exactly what we're talking about and kind of immersing in experiences in order to learn. I think that's been a nice shift for me in my life.
Yeah. Oh, that's really cool. One of the things that I really love is how you describe what your mission is to elevate voices from a multitude of intersectional identities across the educational landscape. And what I love about that, it's just so huge and expansive. But what led you to this mission of elevating voices?
Well, I think fundamentally the work that we do is interested in especially student voice. Mm-hmm. And, you know, in Oregon, I mean, really this is a problem nationally, but the voices that oftentimes dominate in education are white voices, and mm-hmm. our student population is not that. And so mm-hmm. by elevating the voices of students, we are, you know, serving kind of that equity mission as well. I think the time period we're in, equity and inclusion should be at the foundation of everything everybody's doing in education, but it also mm-hmm. has to stay in the forefront of what we're doing. Mm-hmm. And so I think by really centering voices from different communities and different experiences, that's how we achieve that in education. Mm-hmm. But it's hard. People don't know exactly how to do that. And so design naturally lends itself to that. And so mm-hmm. We're kind of lucky that that's an easy way for us to approach that kind of giant goal.
So how do you bring that goal about as a teacher and as a designer?
The really awesome thing about bringing design thinking, human-centered design into the classroom is that it very naturally centers the voices of the students and mm-hmm. really gives teachers permission to not be the holders of knowledge. When we run design challenges, whether in schools or out of schools, the idea is that you're learning your way towards the understanding of a problem that you want to tackle. Mm-hmm. The human-centered design process is just one way to do really intentional student-led learning. In my experience, it's hard to create those experiences for students if you don't have some structure to work within. And I think that's scary for teachers. You know, it's like mm-hmm. you can't just say to a class like, oh, go investigate something you want to learn about and bring something cool back. It's just not right. That students are paralyzed by that. And so design offers kind of this nice format and structure that can still put students in the driver's seat of their learning.
Would you be able to kind of share a scenario where you're using design in a classroom and how students engage with that scenario?
One of the projects that I got to do was at Prescott Elementary in the Park Rose School District. Mm-hmm. And we investigated community spaces and how to create community spaces for the Park Rose area. It was fourth graders, and we took them out to visit with lots of different experts in the field. I think a woman from Portland Parks and Rec met us at Lewittville Park. She had helped design the park space, and so they got to learn a little bit about how she engaged with the community and how they knew what the community wanted. And we actually then did intercept interviews with people at the park. We kind of previewed folks and had them come sit in this area. We didn't just send them out to meet randos. We met with people at the Historic Park Rose organization, a woman who had worked on the board of Gateway Green. We interviewed some people at the school, and then from there, the students created concepts for new community spaces. The goal was to strengthen a sense of connectedness in the community. You know, and then we also do really small things within classrooms. So teachers do workshops with us, and then a lot of times they'll take kind of the concept and infuse it into their curriculum. So there was an English teacher at Benson High School recently who went through our introductory workshop, and then she went right back into her classroom, and the students were reading the Walter Dean Myers book, Monster, which is about a young person who's kind of caught up in a crime by association and is in the justice system. And so she actually, it was really impressive, just so quickly she was able to, like, you know, integrate it, and students were designing solutions to make the criminal justice system more just and more fair. Wow. And she was able to do that all through lit-based empathy work.
There's so much in what you just shared too, and like so many different tools available that you can provide teachers. So some of the things that I heard were like intercept interviews, empathy-based training, you know, like what are some other tools that are at the disposal of teachers to facilitate the growth of student voices?
That is such the beautiful thing about kind of the professional design world, is that people have developed these incredible tools for doing all sorts of different things, you know, like even just synthesizing information that you've learned, but using post-it notes to do it and clustering them to create themes and patterns and draw insights. That is such a classic tool of human-centered design. But when teachers who are, you know, just are one of our totally undervalued creative classes, when they see stuff like that, they automatically see how it can fit into a totally different context. Mm-hmm. So, you know, classically in an English language arts classroom, you're reading a book with the students, and then you like pretend that they're going to generate the themes for the book when, you know, they're all in Spark Notes. The students kind of just get told like, oh, these are the themes of the book, and now you're going to talk about why that is. So, mm-hmm. you know, I think a synthesis tool like just using post-it notes to look at a book, and then instead of saying, here are the themes, like, what are the important moments in the book? What are the important things that stand out to you, and then cluster those, and then say, okay, now what is the theme of this cluster? And then that becomes a theme of the book. You draw an insight out of that, and you can kind of flip it. So that's, you know, one small example. Prototyping is another really powerful tool that teachers, unless they work in STEM, you know, don't often think about that they do prototyping all the time. So, you know, giving students practice rapid prototyping and having some bias towards action is incredibly powerful.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, it's interesting too, because as you're describing these tools, it's like they're incredibly low tech in some ways of being able to get students thinking. So like post-it notes and rapid prototyping, I'm imagining a lot of cardboard and paste at that point.
Yeah. You
know, just the low tech tools, even in a high tech society, help facilitate learning.
It's interesting. Our system is really sadly designed in a way that I think as students get older in the system, that they actually begin to trust themselves less. Mm-hmm. You know, if you ask a student to write a paper and you give them 2 weeks to do it, and maybe this is just human nature, maybe it's not our system, but they'll wait until the last minute and then they'll pump out something and they'll be happy that it's done. But if you give students practice and, you know, instead of giving them too much time, don't give them enough time to do something. So you say, all right, you have this idea on how you're going to make the criminal justice system a better place. Now, take it out of your head and make something that's going to show your concept. And, you know, the more practice they get doing that, the more they trust themselves that they can do that. And also it supports that kind of growth mindset that everybody in education wants for students, but we have to give them practice at it. We got to give them situations where they can make a terrible looking cardboard prototype that they can laugh about and then maybe make better if that's the goal.
I just have to call out a phrase that you just used that got me laughing, not in a bad way, but just like, I love the phrase so much. Punk out something.
I said pump.
Oh, I thought you said punk out something. No. I'm like, that's amazing. DIY aesthetic right there. Punk rock.
I love that. I might actually have to start using that. We're going to punk out this prototype.
That's right. But I mean, right there alone, you know, through the low quality signal, sometimes we hear the wrong thing and it inspires something completely different. I love it.
Right. Which, I mean, it fits right into the prototyping mindset, right? Like sometimes your terrible skills actually lead to you having to do something different. And then all of a sudden you realize like, oh, actually that is a way better idea. So it's really fun to see students get inspired by their mistakes or their maybe their lack of skill sometimes.
Well, and I imagine too that as teachers embrace the fact that they can make mistakes too, that it creates a shared space of learning together.
Yes, exactly. We need teachers modeling all those mindsets. And they're not easy mindsets for adults either. You know, we've all been trained in similar ways. So we need practice as well.
One of the things that's interesting is we read a lot and hear a lot about things like machine learning, artificial intelligence, global workforces, and just the daily proliferation of online learning resources. I mean, the world is changing so fast, and sometimes it seems like education can't keep up. Mm-hmm. How does design help students, and I would argue adults as well, you know, keep up and prepare for how fast things are changing?
That's something that we think a lot about at Construct, because we, you know, we want to help transform the education system, which is a pretty tall bill. And so we need to understand what the value is. And for us, it's all about skills that are transferable, you know, those highly transferable skills like communication and creative problem solving and collaboration is such a big one. If our world is going in these technological directions, like the thing that we can help students to do is add human value to whatever situation they find them in. And there's that statistic that I've heard that like 65% of kids in early elementary school will go out to do jobs that don't exist right now, you know? And so like, if we're really preparing kids, we have to kind of face the fact that we don't actually know what we're preparing them for. Mm-hmm. But I think that it's a really good bet to just, you know, develop those skills that we know are human skills that we have to figure out how we maintain our human-centeredness in the world. The other thing I would add to are mindsets. I think that that is a huge piece of the value of design for students going out into an uncertain future. Construct has 7 that we focus on design mindsets, but clearly there are lots more. But understanding what it means to have a bias towards action, understanding how to have radical collaboration and be inspired by other people, that's what we want for kids.
Yeah. So when you say mindsets, are they kind of like core values, or are they like, because when you say mindset, I automatically think of growth versus fixed mindsets from Carol Dweck's book.
Yeah. You know, I think so much of design is based in growth mindset. I think it underlies all of design thinking. But our design mindsets are kind of mindsets that we've identified as specific to design in schools. Also, we've kind of culled them to be more helpful for teachers. The others that we include are having a beginner's mindset, having an eye towards equity, always being comfortable with ambiguity. That's another important one. And so these are mindsets that we encourage teachers to develop, and they're also mindsets that we encourage teachers to develop in their students.
When you say a phrase like radical collaboration, my brain starts like churning through, you know, how does that apply today? You know, where we're all social distancing, you know, and keeping our distance from one another. So what does radical collaboration look like, you know, today, not just tomorrow?
Yeah. Yeah. That's a really good question. Collaboration in schools looks like social distancing a lot of the time. we just recently did a pitch event we had 6 middle schools who did a transportation design challenge from across the state. And so we brought everybody together on Monday, which was just in the nick of time because I think if it had been Tuesday, it would have been canceled. But this little sixth grader, so adorable. You know, we had a little panel discussion and somebody asked, you know, what was the most important skill you think you came out of this with. And he said, you know, in school, like when I'm told I have to work with a group, I oftentimes like don't want to do that. I, you know, kind of pretend to work with my group. But he said, you know, it was so clear working in this team that utilizing everybody's superpowers and actually engaging and seeing how we're all working towards a shared goal, that it was this very different way of collaborating, which when a sixth grader says that, it's kind of mind blowing, like, oh, yeah, this does work.
What makes it radical? Is it that they're all working toward the same goal?
I think it's seeing the opportunities for collaboration in unusual ways. So, you know, one of the things that we do with our high school students in the summer is we do take them out and do intercept interviews, like at food cart areas, or last year we went down towards the Rose Quarter and interviewed people. And students are always really worried about talking to strangers, and we send them out in teams and they always do great, but they always come back and they are always shocked by how much the people that they interview had to say and how interesting it was and how thoughtful they were and how glad they were to talk to other young people. And so they always come back feeling like, oh, wow, we gained so much just from this random person on the street. And they became like a kind of an expert interview for us in this unique way. And so I think seeing the potential for collaboration in new ways is pretty unique to design.
Well, it's interesting too, because as you're describing this intercept interview where they're going out and interviewing just random people, it's really what career professionals will say people should do, of like interviewing experts about their job or things like that. So it's like, what an amazing skill to get really good at, of just talking to people about things.
Yeah, I mean, as far as thinking about a future work life for students, I just feel like that exposure is really incredible. The BSU design team that I'm working with now, we just met with Valerie Armstrong, who is a designer at Context Partners. It was so cool. Like, the kids were so enthralled by what Valerie had to share with us, and she worked with our team a little bit trying to make a service blueprint. But at the end, it was like this great moment of, you know, when you meet somebody like Valerie, get their email address, email them, take them to coffee. You know, it's like, those are skills that some students get just by maybe being lucky enough to live in a household where that's happening. But the majority of young people don't get exposed to that. And so it's pretty fun to see teenagers get inspired to do stuff like that.
Well, and that brings up the whole topic of equality again, because some people that comes naturally to, and then others need a lot more training and handholding through that process of reaching out and connecting with people.
Totally. Just, you know, some folks are privileged enough to be born into a network, you know, and just get to see that modeled. And so finding opportunities to just expose students to different ways that people are in the world is really fun.
What I appreciate about everything that you're sharing is you're telling a lot of stories and providing a lot of information about how you are going through the process of reimagining school. And it seems such a vital work today.
It's so hard when you talk about such a giant bureaucracy that is so old and has only changed in pretty small ways over the last 100 years, considering how much everything else has changed. But I think the nice thing in bringing design into that space is that it's inherently optimistic, that there's a process to work through, that it's not, you know, I think in education, a lot of times conversations about how things need to change can feel really circular or not very action oriented. Design just offers some tools that are really useful in approaching a problem like that.
I like the idea of teaching process a lot. I'm a huge advocate for understanding the process of anything and teaching that process so that people then can start to, okay, where does this process work? Where does it fall apart? Where do you change it? Because, you know, why teach the test? Why not teach a process that can be repeated and changed?
We really value the process. You know, it's fun because the design challenges do yield usually a really interesting kind of product that we can look at. But when we have students present, we always include a panel discussion and have students talk more about the process and what stood out to them, because that ultimately is the goal. It's not to have students, you know, creating startups that go and live on in the world. It's so fascinating. Kids are so good. I mean, they're like little educational philosophers. Like, they know what was valuable at the end. I never prep them. They say all the right things. It's really incredible how aware they are of their own learning. I don't know that we always give them credit for that in the system.
So you've mentioned the bureaucracy. You've mentioned the old entrenched thinking. What are other barriers that you face in the advancement of this work of reimagining school?
One of the big barriers is that teachers are really abused by the system in a lot of ways, mm-hmm. it in some ways can encourage people to develop mindsets that are kind of antithetical to change. Mm-hmm. And I'll use myself as an example. I don't want to paint the brush too broadly. I taught high school English for 13 years. Wow. And I can say that, you know, after about year 7, 8, I became very, it's almost like a scarcity mindset as a teacher, mm-hmm. right? Like you only have so much time, you only have so much emotional energy. And mm-hmm. so you get, or at least I got very focused on making the highest impact I could for my students, right? I could mm-hmm. control what was in my classroom. I could unleash my creativity there. But in some ways I kind of conserved otherwise. Like I'm not going to go join a committee to improve student discipline on camp, or, you know, I'm not going to go to extra meetings, basically no extra meetings. And coming from that place of scarcity just doesn't inspire curiosity. It doesn't inspire problem solving. It doesn't inspire creativity. And so I think that's one of the big barriers, is that the system is set up to kind of put teachers in that mindset. And that's part of why we focus so much on mindsets when we do teacher professional development, because we know that that's fundamental to any sort of change that's going to happen in the classroom.
So we've talked a lot about teachers, we've talked a lot about students, but what role does the community play in all of this work?
Oh, that's a really good question. Before I jump to community, I think mm-hmm. the other thing that I would add to that ecosystem is the leadership in schools. And we've really focused on, when we bring our programming to schools, you know, trying to hit at all the different levels of the ecosystem. So we do some work with principals through the school retool program, which we convene. It comes out of the D school originally. Now it's with the Teachers Guild. But so, you know, having permission from that leadership is really important for teachers to feel supported in experimenting with a new way of doing things, because it's scary. We've also engaged with some really awesome leadership at the district level, some wonderful superintendents. The whole schools need to see that leadership in order to feel like this is not just a passing fad. And then the community aspect is really fun. I think, you know, people want to be involved in schools. Professionals want to share their experience and their expertise. Schools are strangely hard to interact with. And it's funny, after being in the system for so long and then making this transition to working for a nonprofit, you know, like we have to recruit students for our summer program. And it was so shocking to me how hard it was to get in front of kids when I wanted to go out to schools and recruit. And luckily I had enough good connections from being a teacher that I got past that pretty quickly, but it did stand out to me, like, oh, people who want to engage with schools, it's actually can be really hard. And so I like how design oftentimes gets teachers reaching outside of their classrooms and realizing that if they ask folks to help out and have a role in some sort of design work, that a lot of times people are so willing to give that time, you know, and I think teachers are figuring out ways to get creative about doing that. I've been enjoying sticking middle school kids on Zoom calls with professionals. It's pretty fun.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
So one of the great things about just the community that we live in Portland area, is Design Week Portland. And there are so many educators, and there's such an undercurrent of education and learning. How are you going to be bringing this work to future Design Week Portlands?
Oh, that's an interesting question. I can't think past tomorrow, really, at this point. This year, we decided that we wanted to feature one student team at Design Week Portland. It's something that I hope that we continue to do, because I think, again, this work is most powerful when it just comes right out of the mouth of students. Mm-hmm. I think it speaks for itself. Again, it's hard to get student voice elevated in the ways that maybe we all want it to be. Construct is unique in that we have direct connections with students as well as the larger ecosystem. And so hopefully we can continue to be an organization that is the conduit between students getting to platforms like Design Week Portland.
So what keeps this all fresh? What keeps it exciting and moving forward when there's those days where you just hit every barrier possible.
I think that part of it is that design is so fun and so playful and lighthearted in a way that school often doesn't feel. And so I think it is a relief for a lot of educators and students to engage with it. I think that's a huge advantage of this movement, is that it's fun. Everybody enjoys it when they're doing it, has been my experience.
Well, Erin, this has been such a fun conversation. Last question for you. What are you curious about today?
Oh, I am really curious about so many things. So we're in the midst of this equity-centered design challenge with the BSU out at David Douglas High School. Mm-hmm. And we're kind of mid-process at this point. And so I'm really curious to see how the students' concepts are received broadly, and also, you know, to see if they can kind of make a future impact in their schools. I'm really curious how this particular design challenge, which is going to be featured at Design Week Portland, is going to play out. That's the fun thing, is you never know, right? So
yeah,
we're stepping into it.
That's awesome. Well, Erin, thank you so much for being a guest on Getting Work to Work. It's been so much fun talking about school, education, and just I'm imagining all these students smiling as they learn.
I hope so.
As you go about your day and continue learning new things, don't forget to punk out something. Don't worry about if you don't have the skills or if it's not perfect. Do it yourself. Experiment. Try out new software and tools and see what happens. It might just rock. Until next time, may creativity and curiosity fuel your life.